What's up, sports fans? Welcome to another edition of Sports Odds and Ends, the show for the fly-by-night sports fan. I'm your host, King Kaz, joined as always by my good friend and co-host, the one, the great JVZ.
It's been a year, Kaz. A whole year since Rudy Gobert touched a bunch of microphones and kicked off, I guess, what I'm affectionately referring to as the COVID era in sports. But that started with, I think, about a good 3 weeks to a month of just no sports in general. And so I think, you know, looking back, that day was March 11, 2020, when we saw the entire world, sports world, kind of shut down almost overnight. And then, yeah, we had to find stuff to talk about on this show. And it was certainly an interesting experience, one that I don't necessarily ever want to live through again. But so, you know, as you, the listeners, think back throughout the last year of sports, we've got a Twitter poll out about what you will miss the least about the last year in sports. I think there are a lot of interesting things that happened, some good, some bad, but I guess some of the items on this poll are athletes, that phase where athletes tried to be temporary esports stars. That was kind of weird. All these teams that are basically using losses due to COVID to try to be cheap, unreasonably cheap, I should say, not just like, cutting back here and there, but like, you know, going full, just cut everything, cut all assets, trade everybody away.
Yeah.
There's, just all those incidences that we've cited about different athletes violating the bubbles or teams just being super lax with regulations and causing all kinds of cancellations. Usually like a domino effect of one team getting an outbreak and then leading to other outbreaks around the leagues. So if those three are not the thing that you would miss the least, then choose the other option and reply to us. And we can have a nice back and forth on Twitter. So twitter.com/sportsoddsends is our show account. We're trying to use that a lot more. So, and trying to do a lot more interactivity as well. And so that includes returning this year is the NCAA tournament. And along with that comes our bracket pool. So head on over to sportsoddsandends.com with the, and we'll have a link to that there in our show notes. The password is sports for that. It's locked down slightly for just fans of the show. So, yeah,
you want to give us you want to give us your final four? I'll give mine.
Let's see. I've got Gonzaga winning everything.
Okay.
And beating Illinois in the finals, and then the other two are Baylor and Florida State. So I got three number ones and a number four.
Okay, so I got Kansas winning everything, beating Illinois. And then my other two are Michigan and Baylor. I have a couple of upsets, weird upsets throughout this bracket. I think I might make another one just kind of for fun. And do some weird stuff.
If you join our pool, you can make multiple brackets and you can put joke ones in there. I know we've got a couple people doing that. So, have at it. It's not anything super serious. And
yeah,
all of us are going to be trashed by the end of the second week anyways. So, except for one of us. There's always one that's like, oh man, you saw the future.
Yeah, that's what the fun in the brackets are. It's just having that weird foresight sometimes to be able to do those kind of things. All right, so let's talk about a little bit of college basketball. Michigan State. What's going on?
This is actually taking effect next year. I thought it was going to be this year, but I misread the story initially. But yeah, the Michigan State Spartans basketball team is now, next year is going to be, at least at home, referred to as the MSU Spartans presented by Rocket Mortgage. This is the first time an amateur level basketball team has gotten that kind of level of sponsorship to the point where the entire team gets renamed to fit the sponsor's name.
So here's the thing. I will say, I know, right? I know Rocket Mortgage as a brand that links itself with sports is kind of also has done the same with a lot of esports stuff. I know originally when they were the main sponsor for the 100 Thieves League of Legends team, yeah, it was you know, the 100 Thieves, yada yada, Rocket Mortgage. They kind of do this a lot. And they had the Rocket Mortgage 100 Thieves compound or whatever.
Those are all professional teams, by the way. So
yeah. But I just mean in the branding realm, right? Yeah. This particular side of branding, I'm not fond of, right? And I'm definitely not fond of it in esports because it kind of harkens to that darker side of things we talked about, where you're way too tied into your investment dollar than you are what you do as a sport.
Yeah, your competition.
Yeah.
Effectiveness.
Yeah.
DGM points out that all these Rocket Mortgage type the Rocket Mortgage cinematic universe here is it's all Dan Gilbert companies. So Dan Gilbert is the owner of the Cleveland Cavs. So there was between the 100 Thieves versus the Cleveland Cavaliers, that kind of cross branding there, and then the I think it's Quicken Loans Arena is the arena for the Cavaliers, and Quicken owns Rocket Mortgage. So like all those companies are all Dan Gilbert based companies, and Dan Gilbert also, I think he's from the Detroit area, so that's why he's kind of heavily sponsoring and investing there. He's heavily throwing his money at kind of the revitalization of the Detroit downtown area as well. So Dan Gilbert's kind of got his fingers into everything outside of just owning the Pistons and any of the other Detroit teams. And Michigan State University alumnus. So it makes sense that he would want to sponsor the team.
Yeah.
It just looks so goddamn tacky. To me, the line is the fact that this is an amateur team. This is a school team, so like the name of the team itself should be just based off of the school, and it shouldn't change year after year depending on who sponsors the team. And on top of that, the fact that this money, that they have to be getting paid a shit ton of money in order to do a name change like this. And when you're talking about those kinds of exorbitant amounts of money, that's not going to make its way to the student athletes.
We know that. Like,
yeah, it's
hell. And even in esports, some of that money doesn't make it to the players. So it's starting to. But yeah, it doesn't always, right? It hasn't always.
People will argue that it does because, maybe they'll upgrade the locker room and they'll upgrade facilities and stuff. But they're not going to use this to pay the players, even though the players are the reason why that they can score this kind of sponsorship deal. Maybe a lot of it will make its way into Tom Izzo's pocket, but on top of that, this is a public university as well, so it's taxpayers are a part of this as well. So I think tacky is the best way to describe it. Mm-hmm. Plus the fact that this is what the team's name is going to be at home, but then on the road they'll just be Michigan State again. So that's just weird.
Yeah, it's kind of the ugly side of these big types of sponsorships, right? It's why I poo-poo it in esports as well. Because like I said, especially in professional level sports, right? It comes with more things, right? It comes with more needed of representation of the sponsor. It comes with wanting to keep the sponsor happy, right? And a lot of times, that isn't winning games. Like it isn't about that. It's literally about getting the name of the sponsor out there and doing things for the sponsor. So
I think a lot of times what happens is once the initial investment period is over, then the sponsor doesn't necessarily renew because they already got their name out there. And the point was to just initially get their name out there.
JVZ?
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question here. And Kaz, you, by all means, how do you feel about something like this being a university, it being publicly funded since it is a state university, over corporate sponsorship? Like, which would you say is less egregious?
Well, so it kind of depends. Like, is this money going towards... I would feel less icky about it if the students were getting paid, even if it was like a little bit. Like, I don't necessarily need them to get paid in proportion to the sponsorship. But if the... Yeah, like I assume this money is staying within the athletic program, it might not necessarily be funneled out to the rest of the university as well. Like if there were benefits like that at large, to the point where you could argue that because of the sponsorship, then taxpayers don't have to pay as much to fund university operations, then maybe I would feel better about it. But this is all, at least what I'm making the assumption, because these things always turn out this way, but it's, you know, this is the egregious side of sports. This is the side where people complain that we're spending too much money on sports and not enough on the important things. So I don't know if I answered your question there, but that's kind of it raises all the same flags that make me feel icky about sports.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, I don't like these big sponsor things in any realm when it's done this way. I don't mind like a money drop on certain things, and at the college level it just seems weird. It seems grossly weird. I understand he has a respect for this school because, like you said, he is an alum of the school, he is from the area, maybe it is his way of giving back, but we're so jaded by corporate and industry and venture funding that it just looks bad. So it's hard in that regard, because I do think maybe it is him trying to continue to do good for a city and a state that he loves. But I just, it's icky. I don't like it. I don't care for it, man.
Yeah. And maybe this ends up being the norm. Maybe this is just the first domino to fall, and now all these other college teams are going to start doing this as well. And maybe Boeing sponsors the University of Washington or something, I do like the idea of like sponsors trying to keep things local and all that. It's just, I think I'm just jaded about where I expect the money to go, because I don't expect it. I certainly don't expect it to benefit the athletes, and I don't think it's going to benefit the entire student body as a whole. So, but maybe they'll prove me wrong. All right. One more college story, kind of a college / let's make fun of the Knicks again story, because Patrick Ewing is the coach of the Georgetown Hoyas, who had kind of a miracle Big East championship run. They are now seeded 12 in the tournament in the East bracket, and they'll play number 5 Colorado. But Patrick Ewing, Knicks legend from your childhood and mine, is this Big East tournament happened at Madison Square Garden, kind of the building that that he, I mean, it was already famous before, but Patrick Ewing was a fixture of the Knicks in the 90s, maybe even the biggest Knicks star, you know, of since that point. I don't know if Carmelo Anthony trumps Patrick Ewing in that respect. So he is, you know, maybe the biggest Knicks legend around, and you know, his number is hanging up in the rafters. He's people in Madison Square Garden should know who Patrick Ewing is, but he keeps getting stopped by security backstage throughout this entire tournament, and to the point where he had to complain about it publicly. Like, and this isn't just him trying to say that, like, he, you know, security should just let him through, but, like, you know, when he's backstage doing, you know, moving from place to place, he's still getting accosted by security who doesn't know who he is and is wondering why this guy is walking around backstage. And, you know, if anybody, it doesn't sound like he's asking for special privileges. He's just kind of asking to be left alone and not accosted in the one building where he helped make the Knicks a popular franchise in the 90s. So, yeah, he, I don't think he meant to publicly call out James Dolan about it, but
No, he did.
He kind of did. And I think after the treatment that Charles Oakley got last year, that has kind of made this more awkward. And the treatment that Spike Lee got last year as well. Although I guess he's less entitled to it because he wasn't a player, but it's really weird to see the kind of treatment that former Knicks or that Knicks legends are getting among the current Knicks administration, or at least under this ownership group.
Yeah, I don't, it's like, I can give a sense of, like, maybe some of the security doesn't know who he is, right? Like, that is what it is. But you would assume there is a sense of, like, oh, hey, just so you guys know, you know, this is who is going to be in the building today, kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like, we're having this tournament, yada, yada, yada. These are the, like, not even that the fact that it's Patrick Ewing, just the fact that he is a coach of one of the teams who is taking part in this tournament. He, you know what I mean? Like people who are then working there or doing an event there on that ground alone should be known to the security staff. Right.
Yeah.
Because those are the people who then it is your job to secure. Like, so the fact that you don't know who they are kind of more goes to sense that I'd be worried working there because you don't know who anyone is that like that to me gives me a sense that just any goddamn Tom, Dick, and Harry is just back there and you don't know who the hell they are. Yeah.
Let me throw this out there. Given the history of what we know about James Dolan and former Knicks players, and given James Dolan's personality, do you think that it's possible that this was James Dolan trying to troll Patrick Ewing and trying to be funny?
No, because it's happening too consistently with people, and I would want more information as to, like, is it happening? Like, one, Patrick Ewing doesn't seem like the kind of guy to be that friendly and jokey. You know what I mean? Like, and two, the situation just seems odd. Once, maybe twice, but, like, no. Either that is some really weird, lost kind of joke, right, where somebody just has no perception of what an actual joke is, and I know those kind of people, and it's possible, but, like, someone somewhere has to be like, hey, look, the boss thinks this is funny, but no, like, let's not do that. Like, he's a fucking idiot. Please don't. Like, no.
Yeah, I think at the very least, it's like an email should go out and say, like, hey, returning to Madison Square Garden is Knicks legend Patrick Ewing, and here to coach the Georgetown Hoyas. Let's encourage him. Let's welcome him back with open arms. It's, you know, to me, that's like the minimum. Just from a hospitality perspective, like, and I'm not a guy that is like, you know, shower me with gifts or anything like that, and I don't think Patrick Ewing is either, and it doesn't sound like that's what he's asking for. He's just asking for, like, you know, at least let him do his job and walk from place to place without getting treated like he snuck into the building, because, you know, he helped build this building in a way that's you know, it's he didn't help put the franchise on the map, but he helped repopularize the franchise. He is he embodies the gritty working man spirit that that helped make the Knicks, such a popular brand the last time that they were a popular brand. Yeah, it sucks to see him get treated that way. It kind of makes me wonder, like, how would Patrick or how would Carmelo Anthony get treated, you know, maybe 10, 20 years from now, or how would Jeremy Lin get treated? If Patrick Ewing is getting this kind of treatment, then, you know, what does Allen Houston have to deal with?
Yeah.
And some of those guys that are less well known, because Patrick Ewing should be at the top of the list that people know in Madison Square Garden. All right. I couldn't think of any New York Rangers names, and maybe that's because hockey is not on TV enough. But maybe what will help is that the NHL is now back on ESPN. So this is a good sign for the NHL, because they were previously getting only $200 million a year from NBC for exclusive rights to all national TV NHL broadcasts. And I think that was like a 10-year deal. And that was when NHL viewership was kind of at its lowest. But now it's increasing in popularity again. And just these sports rights packages are just increasing in value in general. So ESPN is only buying half of the broadcasting rights, and they're paying $400 million for that. Already double what they were making before for only half of the package. The other half is presumably staying with NBC, probably for another increase in price as well. So a lot of TV money coming into the NHL, and that is going to result in salary cap implications, probably a massive increase in the salary cap as well. So so that's good for NHL players, good for NHL teams, and good for the overall health of the league. We'll probably see Stanley Cup Finals games on ABC and ESPN. Presumably they might get some better coverage, but I don't know. I can't think of like ESPN personalities that would be super well qualified to talk hockey. I think, you know, some of the people on like their morning shows would be really awkward when trying to stumble through hockey coverage. They'll probably have to go out and hire some people. So. But I think now that the fact there's more than one national large sports network hiring hockey people to come on and talk hockey, I think that's a good thing for hockey analysts. Bob Kelly in the chat points out that there's probably an increase in the salary floor as well. So everybody gets a raise, basically. because the value of hockey has gone up. So that's a good thing. And good thing for the overall health of hockey. On this show, we are always telling people to watch more hockey. Kaz is always saying he's going to watch more hockey. How is that going?
Not well so far, but hopefully this helps.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see it on ESPN more often, and we don't have to go find wherever your local NBC Sports network is, which might also be on like the second tier of the cable package. It's we get more national events on NBC and hopefully on ABC as well for the antenna broadcasts. So, yeah, good for hockey. More broadcasting news. We've got Major League Baseball trying to get on the internet streaming for a national broadcast. They already have MLB TV, which is from everything I've heard, a very, very nice package. But yeah, the now they're looking into, or at least they're expanding their YouTube presence when it comes to streaming live games. They not just live games, but exclusive live games. So they previously did 13 broadcasts in 2019, only four last year, but we had the shortened season last year. But two of the games last year were exclusive games. This year, they're doing 21 exclusive games for MLB Game of the Week live on YouTube is what they're calling it. So youtube.com/MLB if you want to check those games out. Starting April 7th, I think, is going to be a game between the Tampa Bay Rays and the Red Sox. I think they're kind of rotating the broadcasting crew as well. So this will give an opportunity for people who don't pay for cable packages to check out some baseball in the middle of the season without having to.
Yeah.
I think there's still kind of Fox Saturday baseball that they can get over the air. But other than that, I think this is probably the best option for getting new younger fans to stumble on the product. People that don't necessarily have TVs and don't channel surf.
I think this is a good first step, and I think this is good to get into the exploration of, and kind of something I think I would like to see going down the line later on is to do what some esports tournaments do, which is take a streamer or a YouTuber or somebody like that and give them co-casting rights to it if it's going to be on a platform already. It's a little bit easier with Twitch. It might have the same simplicity with YouTube, but you basically give that person the ability to watch party it, as Twitch likes to call it, where yeah. They can show it to their stream and talk about it, right? And what I really liked with some of the Counter-Strike tournaments that they used to do was they would give their co-cast partners, streamers, a version of the stream that had no caster audio. So that it just had the game audio, and then that person was allowed to talk over it, right, to yeah. their stream. Some people just have the rights to do it where they can do it, but you still have caster audio, all that kind of stuff. I would love maybe a few years down the line for sports to explore something like that, right? Like, there are a lot of big named live streamers who are really, really into sports and also kind of fly under the family friendly tag in a sense, that would be a great way to get more eyes on the sport, right? If that person was also into the sport. I think you have to have people to do the research to make sure that that person fits, right? But you could get like some of these guys who are really in the NBA and do it anyway in a weird way, right? There are guys who second screen a basketball game, and it's auditioning, but in the sense that I just mean you have to find someone who isn't going to then be weird about it, right? Like, you have to just find the right people that match with it.
I mean, you can let anybody do it, but you promote the ones that aren't going to be weird.
Yeah. Like the recent Valorant tournament, and which kind of sat weird with me, only let 4 streamers have that right to co-cast it. And yeah, those were some of the biggest streamers, but some of them weren't really people. Like, I wish just more people had the right to do it with yeah. that. And that's a whole other take. But
so the Fan-Controlled Football League is actually like they were not only doing that, but also promoting it, because they've got, you know, a bunch of different owners for the 4 teams that they have. So they were, you know, on top of bringing some of those famous owners in for interviews on the mainstream, they would, you know, some of those guys like, you know, for the Beasts, Miro from AEW was, you know, he streams normally. So he started co-streaming during the games, during Beast games. And so it was more fun to watch his stream and watch him, you know, get mad at the refs or whatever than watching the main feed where you just kind of get the normal announcers. Mm-hmm. You kind of have to keep them both open at the same time because you have to be on the main one to call plays and stuff or to vote on play calls. But that was just an interactive thing specific to the Fan-Controlled Football League. But the stuff like this, I think, has tons of potential during the playoffs because you can then draw upon your own player base to fill out these special co-streamer slots because it's, you know, these are people that, you know, aren't necessarily participating in the playoffs, but they are actual players and they're just, you know, not in the playoffs. They're at home. So might as well find a way to capitalize on their free time and let them hang out. I mean, some of these people are probably just going to be live tweeting the game anyways.
Mm-hmm.
So I would love to see. To see more of that. DJM also brings up the fact that the NBA is effectively using Twitch as kind of the broadcast partner for the G League, and baseball has, you know, not just one lower tier league, they've got 4 lower tier leagues.
Yeah.
So, you know, at the very least, AAA level baseball could be a fun place for fans to come and watch the stars of tomorrow playing today. So there's a ton of potential there for streaming services and for the ability to get more eyes on the product. And it's at the top level where we have all these exclusive rights deals, but you know, just the level below that, there's not a whole lot of money to be lost by going to an online only audience and not having somebody like ESPN come and pay you a shit ton of money, because you're probably not going to get that kind of money from anywhere. From anywhere at all, and any money you do get is probably going to be from just a local area network, because these teams, the lower league teams, only have local reach rather than national or global reach. So, you know, why not just put the games online for everybody to see? Because at that point, getting more eyeballs is more important than getting an exclusive rights deal. It wasn't that long ago that I was saying the NHL should do this. Obviously, I was wrong because they managed to sign a massive new exclusive rights deal. But I would have loved to see the NHL just bite the bullet and say, we don't have that many viewers. Let's just put it all online. DJM points out that the more eyeballs you get on the product, the more advertising you get for the product. Mm-hmm. You know, it's less about ratings nowadays and more about engagement. And the more eyeballs you get on the product, the more you get people sharing highlights, the more of all that. And then the more of that you get, the more people buying tickets to come see these events live, the more merch you get being sold. It's Yeah, eyeballs is the key. It's, I know among the creative community, getting paid with exposure is kind of a joke, but I think at this level, when it comes to sports, getting more exposure is a big deal, especially if you know you're already pulling in a shit ton of money from your top level teams. So minor league teams, minor league baseball especially, like they have a strong local kind of community feel to it, and so anything that gets local people able to view games without a high barrier to entry, like ticket prices are still not something that everybody can afford. So I miss the days of being able to just turn on local broadcast TV and watch basketball games or whatever. I understand that, you know, there's too much money to be lost by putting that stuff on free TV now. But at the lower levels, I still think there's an opportunity there.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Also, random baseball shout out, but we're in the middle of spring training right now. So this is kind of where we get to see some of the weirder shit that happens throughout the year, because you get a wider base of players. But shout out to Luis Guillermo, who had a 22 pitch at bat on Sunday, which led to a walk.
That was so weird. I saw the highlight of it, and my brain could not just fathom that being a thing. You know, I've seen people just you know, trying to get the ball. Like, and I mean, that's work between two people, right? That's just work between two guys who are just really trying to figure each other out and figure out that spacing. It
took 11 minutes for that at bat. And I guess with each passing pitch, like once you get past 10 mm-hmm. swings, then everybody starts getting excited in between every pitch, and it lasted for another 12 pitches beyond that. So that was, it's definitely fun to watch those kinds of mind games. Probably not fun for the pitcher, because he got pulled. That was the only batter he faced. He got brought in for that. Normally there's a three batter minimum rule, but in this case, it's preseason. So it's spring training. So that rule doesn't apply. So the pitcher was brought in for that. And then I think he was meant to only go for that inning, but they expected an inning of around 22 pitches.
Mm-hmm.
So that he used up all his pitches on that one guy. So and didn't even get him out. He got a walk for it. So that's, you know, you can just intentionally walk somebody now without throwing a single pitch. But he threw 22 times and accomplished the exact same thing. Lesson learned for the pitcher, and well done for Luis Guillermo. I want to dive into the stat a little bit more about, you know, the effect of very, very patient batters on how quickly they can wear out pitchers. As Bob Kelly points out in the chat, that's, you know, that 22 pitches right there is about 1/5 of a starting pitcher's workload. And those starting pitchers are expecting to go 6 innings or more. And then you send one guy out there and he already milks 22 pitches away. That's incredible patience right there. So yeah, spring training, fun stuff. Watch more baseball. You can watch it on YouTube now. All right. As we are speaking, there are NFL free agent signings going on. Things are kind of a mess already because due to COVID, the NHL, the NFL reduced its salary cap this year to $182.5 million. I think it was sitting around $200 million before. So a lot of teams have had to cut quite a few players. But what we're seeing more often now is a lot of teams restructuring existing contracts to pay out more money as bonuses. So the players actually get this money immediately now, and then they can spread for cap purposes. They can spread that bonus money across the rest of the contract. And so they're kind of they're pushing off when this money has to count against the cap in order to temporarily reduce their cap obligations now, with the expectation that as the NFL recovers from COVID, the cap is going to go back up, and it's going to go back up by a lot, especially when they sign new TV deals as well, like the NHL just did. So we're talking about guys like Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady, Travis Kelce, even Taysom Hill, whose contract everybody makes fun of. He restructured, and all these guys they're not losing any money by doing this. They're just they're getting more of it now, and it's just counted as bonus money now. If all this sounds confusing, we've got a link in the show notes from an article from The Ringer that kind of summarizes all this, but it's still kind of confusing. But yeah, NFL contracts are confusing because they're not necessarily guaranteed. And it's not like baseball contracts or basketball contracts where you can say this player is making this much money over this many years and have a reasonable amount of an idea of how that's going to affect the salary cap. All that said, Dak Prescott, we've been talking about his contract forever. Or his contract negotiations forever. And then things were kind of a little iffy when he got injured this past year, when he broke his leg. And now that saga is finally over. He's signed a contract, 4 years, which is kind of what he wanted. $160 million, the total amount of the contract, but $126 million guaranteed, which I think is a record. So, so good for Dak Prescott, good for the Cowboys to lock him down long term, even though I think they wanted him for 5 years initially. But still, it's if they had to franchise tag him again this year, that would have been $38 million against the cap. This year, it's only $22 million against the cap because of all the salary cap shenanigans I mentioned before. So even though he's getting paid like $75 million in bonuses and salary this year, through some sort of weird logic, that's only going to count $22 million against the cap. I think the important thing about this signing is when it comes to free agent quarterbacks that were available, there was Dak Prescott, and then there was a massive drop from him to the next guy, which I think was Ryan Fitzpatrick, maybe Jameis Winston, who then re-signed with the New Orleans Saints because Drew Brees is now officially retired. Ryan Fitzpatrick has signed with the Washington football
team. Hot take time, boys. Hot take time. And everyone listening live in the Twitch chat room, hot take time as well. You're the coach of the New Orleans Saints. Who's your starter week one, Taysom Hill or Jameis Winston? Kaz.
Jameis Winston.
Visa.
Yeah, it's Jameis. And I think they've also said that it's going to be Jameis Winston. I think they're still looking to use Taysom Hill as just a utility guy. But if you actually need somebody to throw the ball, it's Jameis Winston.
Here's how I play this out, right? You believe in the guy you have right now, but what you do for the guy coming up is you tell him you're going to give him chances to compete for the job, which you do. In preseason, you send him out there for a game or two to see how he's looking. Maybe in some throwaway games, you give him a fourth quarter or half of the third quarter start just to see how it's going, see how he's doing. And I think you give him a year of sitting back and learning the playbook and doing those things and give him in his head a sense of competing for the job while letting Jameis Winston know the job is his. You know what I mean? Like you don't necessarily need to pit them against each other, but you give somebody a reason to work for it.
Taysom Hill has probably had more reps last year than Jameis Winston did.
Yeah.
Because he was being used as this utility quarterback slash running back hybrid. But yeah, it's been weird. Like everybody that's, even like, football pundits on TV have been looking at the situation, wondering like, why isn't Jameis Winston getting more of a chance? Even when Drew Brees was out last year with broken ribs, I think Taysom Hill got to start those games. Even though they do have a, maybe the best backup quarterback in the league in Jameis Winston right now. So now Winston gets to be the starter, his first chance to be a starter again since he went 30 for 30.
Maybe what I said was in reverse for them. You know what I mean? Give Jameis Winston that time to really, really learn the playbook, really get used to this offense and tell him to compete for the job. And that's what happened. But, you never really know how people really approach these situations.
Yeah. And I guess that time was last year. So now is his time to shine without, without being underneath Drew Brees' shadow. And I mean, he chose to re-sign with the Saints. So obviously I think he certainly didn't complain at all last year about not getting enough reps. So this year, I think maybe something was in the works where he knew that he was going to be the heir apparent, but he's got some big shoes to fill. Drew Brees, now that I think about it, he had an absurdly long career, an absurdly long successful career with the Saints, and he had a decent career with the Chargers even before that. But yeah, his time with the Saints basically mirrored Philip Rivers' entire career, and then more years on top of that. So first ballot Hall of Famer. Congratulations to Drew Brees for leaving the game on a somewhat high note and no longer taking hits to his ribs, which are probably made of dust at this point. As far as quarterbacks that are left, there is not a whole lot. Maybe Mitchell Trubisky might be the best quarterback that is left. Cam Newton has re-signed with the Patriots. And even though he didn't have a good season last year, I think some people are interpreting this as sort of a tacit acknowledgement that his poor performance last year wasn't necessarily his fault. Just that entire team sucked. To compensate for the fact that the team sucked ass last year, the Patriots are on a massive spending spree right now.
Mm-hmm.
They went out and signed two tight ends, Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry. And the Patriots are a team that traditionally has liked to roll with two good pass catching tight ends. So they've got two weapons there. They went out and got some wide receivers as well. Nelson Aguilar and Kendrick Bourne from the Raiders and 49ers. They went out and got a bunch of defensive upgrades as well. I think they spent more than $100 million in guaranteed money. So all time in as far as like free agency periods and guaranteed money expenditures. So they are very obviously trying to retool right now. And after watching their Hall of Fame quarterback leave and go win a Super Bowl with another team, I think I assume Bill Belichick took that personally, and now he's going out and trying to fill all the various holes that were kind of uncovered by the departure of the greatest quarterback of all time.
Yeah. And I mean, so they brought back Cam Newton, which I don't think anybody initially thought would happen, but they did. They, like you said, they secure tight ends, wide receivers, some offensive line to maybe help actually protect Cam Newton. And like really good legitimate moves in pushing for and trying to secure your offense. I like everyone else, am very surprised by this. Especially for the contract length and monetary value of some of these contracts are like pretty high. too. Like, so it's very surprising to see.
The Patriots don't necessarily spend a lot of money in free agency. They always seem to build through the draft, and they've been able to draft at least moderately well over and over again for so many years, because, you know, whatever gap that they had in that, Tom Brady was able to fill by himself, by just, you know, good playoff performances, good consistent performance during the regular season, and then winning games when it mattered. And, you know, between that and good coaching, they've been able to put it all together. But I think just, you know, losing Tom Brady, losing Rob Gronkowski, losing a bunch of other guys who left at the same time,
not being able to get Antonio Brown when they wanted him.
Yeah. And all that was, you know, all that finally caught up to the Patriots last year. They finally missed the playoffs for the first time in a long time. And, you know, they were, I don't want to say one of the worst teams in the league, but they were certainly in the bottom half. And so now they're, you know, it's dangerous. I'm scared because, you know, usually you don't see the Patriots this active. So it's the mantra we always go back to. It's Bill Belichick is up to something. And last year they had their tank year. So now they got good draft picks this year. If they want to draft a quarterback, they can. And they can get a pretty good one. So it's, I don't know. This is dangerous. So always look out for the Patriots. Nelson Aguilar, I know he gets shit on a lot for dropping a lot of passes. I think he got memed at some point because, I don't know, pretty good upgrade at wide receiver for them. Kendrick Bourne, I got to see him play for the Niners. He was a pretty decent third or fourth option. But it's kind of hard to evaluate him considering the people that were throwing to him were Nick Mullins and CJ Beathard, because Jimmy Garoppolo was injured so often. Garoppolo, I think, was a rumored trade target for the Patriots, but looks like that deal didn't go through. So they're going to roll with Cam Newton for one more year and see what happens after that. Could be worse. They could be the Bears, who had to sign Andy Dalton after trying to go after Russell Wilson, who I have to acknowledge you were right on the show when you said so many weeks ago that Russell Wilson is upset and doesn't want to be there in Seattle. So,
right, like, quiet rage, man. It is a look. It is a thing, right? And there are just people who not everybody wants to air out their laundry, right? Some people are just quiet, reserved people. They like to handle business how business should be handled between the people involved. And that's how Russell Wilson has always seemed to me, right? He's always going to put on a good public face. He's never really going to let you know what his business is. He is a smart, calculated guy. And I think part of the thing is, for me, I really like Russell Wilson as a quarterback. I think he is hella smart. He is hella athletic. I think he has all what it takes to be a top level person. His stats show the same. But the team around him isn't showing that, right? It isn't putting that forth. He doesn't get the amount of praise that he should for the work that he does. And that's because he is sometimes, he's not loud, he's not boisterous, he's not super media marketable, even though I think he is. But I think it's because he has this kind of same quiet reservedness that, like, Tiger Woods has. But Tiger Woods is so dominant at his sport that it gives him that media marketability, because there's literally no one else, right? But as far as football goes, there are other people, right? There are other personalities. So that type of quiet reservedness tends to get pushed back a little bit. But you look at the numbers and they're good. Like, the intangibles are good. Everything else is good. I just think outside of probably DK Metcalf, he has no help. Like, yeah. Help this man, please. Like, put him in a position to actually do the things that he needs to do and get back to that winning way that they did have. They really were a team that looked like they could really, really, really go for it a few times, and they haven't. They've gone for it, you know, once or twice. But other than that, like, I don't know. I want to see more from this. Like, I feel like Russell Wilson is starting to get wasted there. And I think that's what he feels, right? Like, outside of everything else, it's all of those things. It's not getting... And the praise is just in my own head. I don't know if that's in his. I'm just putting out what I feel, the energy from the room. But, like, this man should be given way more to work with. And he's just... not.
Yeah, the energy that I'm getting from him now is a guy who wants to leave but also doesn't want to get blamed for leaving. You know, he's under contract, and mm-hmm. that's the issue with all these Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson, and Aaron Rodgers, all these supposedly unhappy quarterbacks, are pretty obviously unhappy quarterbacks. If a team wants to go out and get those guys, they got to give up a bunch of draft picks to get them, and right now nobody wants to pay that price. Matt Stafford was the one guy that was available and attainable. And then Carson Wentz after that, I think, he got a second opportunity somewhere else. Other than that, I think part of the reason why Dak Prescott got the massive contract that he did was if you don't get Dak Prescott, if you don't lock him up, who else are you going to throw in there? Because they tried Andy Dalton, and Andy Dalton didn't work out. The Bears got desperate, and they're trying Andy Dalton next year because they don't want to try the Mitchell Trubisky experiment again. Now somebody else is going to go and take a chance on Mitchell Trubisky. Hopefully things work out for him, because I predicted in the prediction show that he would have a resurgence this year. But you might as well, instead of, you know, dumping a bunch of assets to try to get somebody like, try to trade for a guy, you might as well just draft somebody. So at this point, there's going to be plenty of rookie quarterbacks available in the draft. And so when draft time comes around next month, we'll probably talk about that a little bit. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of tanking for Trevor that happened this year. The Jaguars won that sweepstakes. So Urban Meyer gets to start out his year with a new quarterback project. And so we'll have to see what happens to the rest of the quarterbacks out there and where they'll fall. But yeah, as of right now, Mitchell Trubisky is on the clock. He will probably be the next quarterback domino to fall. And then Alex Smith. And there's just not a lot left. Even with Drew Brees retiring and Phillip Rivers retiring, there's only so many open starting quarterback spots available. And still not enough good quarterbacks to fill them all. So yeah, I think that's our show for this week. Head on over to twitter.com/sportsoddsends to interact with our show Twitter account throughout the week. Remember, we've got a poll out there. Head on over to sportsoddsandends.com. Join our bracket pool. We've got a link to that there. We also have a link to our Discord. Please join the Discord so that we can talk sports throughout the week, share highlights and stuff. We can have a fun time there. twitch.tv/sportsoddsandends live every Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, or throughout the week if we have to postpone. patreon.com/sportsoddsandends if you want to support the show financially. And thank you to all of you guys who currently do that. And thank you to all of you who listen to this show diligently every week. We have a good time doing the show for you. So
heck yeah.
Thank you guys, and we'll see you next time.